Working Cows Podcast, Episode 87.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Hi, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And this episode is brought to you by the High Plains Ranch Practicum. Registration for this year's class open right now at hpranchpracticum.com. Today, we are talking to Bob Kinford. Pretty excited about this episode, kind of a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but you know what? A little bit serious, too, about the three-quarters misguided motivations of the American Prairie Reserve. There will be a link in the show notes page today to the article that we're talking about today from the Tri-State Livestock News of the American Prairie Reserve and some of what's going on with them in eastern Montana. But I wanted to talk to Bob because Bob talks about rebooting herd instinct in cows and how that can impact the grass and how that can start to regenerate land and some of those things. So, Bob, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Hello. Glad to be here. Kind of honored to be here for the second time.
You're in the elite group now of two-time guests. Ooh.
I guess it's got to be elite to be on twice.
So I reached out to my private Facebook group and shared an article, which will be linked in the show notes page at workingcows.net/85. I'll be linking to this article at workingcows.net/85 about the American Serengeti and how they are trying to create this large, expansive, open prairie reserve without any fences. And this is the work of the American Prairie Reserve. And I think your response in the private Facebook group was that this is a three-quarters misguided idea that they have. And you shared with me some of your experience with them. Could you share with us a little bit of your experience with the American Prairie Reserve and kind of what you know about what they're trying to do?
Yeah, they basically are under the assumption that because of the fact that the prairies were developed by the bison, and that's the first part that they're wrong on, it wasn't just bison. There was massive herds of antelope and elk that crisscrossed paths across the prairie. But they're thinking, okay, we throw bison out there, and they are just going to go ahead and come together as herds, and they're going to repair the prairie. And they believe that Alan Savory was wrong, no matter how much has been coming out here in recent years about soil science and how the holistic grazing methods work. They believe that's all wrong. These bison are just going to do it on their own. But that's not going to happen until you actually have those bison working as several herds on there that will come together as a big herd at certain times of the year and break back up. And those bison just aren't going to do it on their own.
And this is a 3 million acre chunk of ground they're trying to put together between buying out private ranches and then the government and state leases that go with them. And they are removing all of the interior fences. I'm not sure what their plan for water infrastructure is, if any. But, you know, I know that you talk a lot about rebooting herd instinct. So what would it look like? You kind of touched on it there, but what would it look like if they were operating as a herd, especially a herd that's capable of regenerating landscapes?
Well, they would have to have probably two herds, if not three herds. And on a million acres, God, I'd hate to even think of how many bison that it'd take. You know, and that's the other thing. They don't even have, they'd have to buy out every bison ranch that Ted Turner has to put on that place just to get started. So, you know, they actually need to keep the cows going on there, but have the cows running as a herd. And depends, you know, what are they doing with the bison? Are they just letting them multiply? They're not going to harvest any for meat. You know, there's a lot of different little facets that go in there. And it's, I've got a friend down in Mexico on the El Uno Ranch that they're running bison. And they've got 125 head, but they have to lined up. They're in the same pasture, but they're basically running as three herds because they've got all of these older bulls that keep getting run out by the younger bulls. So there's a lot of different facets to this that they're not looking at. And the biggest one that they're not looking at is that we have basically taken away the herd instinct from them.
There are, I mean, how many, I guess I wouldn't know, but there are very few, if any at all, wild bison that would be traced back to a herd of bison that's never been in captivity at any point in the generations.
I don't think there would be any.
Right.
I don't think there would be any at all, actually.
That would be my guess.
I mean, there might be one, but they were so close to extinction that I don't think that there's any that were actually ever truly wild.
Right. And you talk about the fact that it wasn't just bison. It was massive herds of antelope and elk. And antelope isn't necessarily hard to believe if you've ever been in Wyoming or Western South Dakota.
Yeah, you get up there and, you can see that they run pretty good sized herds.
Right. But the elk is hard. You know, we don't think of elk as a prairie animal, but that goes back to what you're talking about with the bison, that we've changed their behavior. And the same thing has happened with the elk.
We didn't even domesticate the elk. All we did is put enough pressure from civilization, and they left the prairies and went to the mountains.
Right.
And I've heard that off of Facebook, a friend of mine up in North Dakota was saying that they have seen some elk that, you know, would migrate from one mountain range to another, you know, just, you know, four or five at a time, and they have some that have started staying on their ranch. So maybe some of these elk are kind of reverting back, but, you know, they need to do this with herds of elk and antelope along with the bison and work with them all to get them following a bigger range.
What kind of management structure is on that place in North Dakota?
I'm not sure. It's just a guy I know on Facebook, and he was mentioning he's not doing the holistic grazing though. So
we do see a lot of those places that do start to regenerate landscapes with holistic management, that the wildlife does return. So I was just wondering if they were bringing back some grasses that were attractive to those critters or not. But
There's the places down in Mexico that are doing it. After a few years, they started getting a lot of deer moving in.
Right.
And mountain lions and everything else. And it does stay, it sounds weird, but it kind of stays in a balance where they're not really losing any calves to the mountain lions, but because the mountain lions basically like the deer like we like beef. So it keeps it kind of balanced out. It
takes quite a few mountain lions to take down a mean old Brahma, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it depends on how they go about it. But they're going to go for the easiest kill, not what's going to beat them up in the process.
Right. So we kind of talked a little bit about what they would look like if they were operating as a herd. You mentioned that they would have two or three herds, and then they would come together as one big herd. Is that right?
Yeah, they would. They'd have different migrations, and there's times of the year that these herds break up, and then when they come back together is a big herd. If those herds just happen to be in the right areas, because their paths are going to have to crisscross. You know, they don't just go from all north to south. Some go north to south, some go east to west. You know, some might go northeast, southeast, or northwest, southeast, to where they're following different migration patterns to the cross, because that's basically the only way that you get it to where they cover the whole property, I guess what you'd call it. But I mean, the prairie, that's what they had animals that migrated north and south and east and west. And it, you know, took diagonal patterns, so they need more species than just the bison, and they need to reboot the herd instinct in them and then have them guided through to where they get used to going from the north end of the property down to the south end and back, rather than just staying in one small area, because these animals aren't used to actually migrating or acting as a herd.
So let's say we lived in an alternate universe and they called Bob Kinford up and they said, hey, we want you to come and reboot the herd instinct in these bison. Where would you start?
Well, I would start with getting them gathered up as close to possible as you can. Then I would have to also start getting them acclimated to being actually work horseback instead of just gently jammed, if you put it that, put it mildly, just gently jammed with motorcycles and helicopters to go on someplace. A buddy of mine down there in Mexico, we played around with it a couple of days, and he's been working at it, and they'll work horseback, but they're a little bit more aggressive, and it takes a little bit more patience. But instead of taking like on a bunch of cows, it takes 5 days. It might take you 4 or 5 months before you really got to getting the results that you want with the bison, just because of the fact that they are a little bit more, well, they're a lot more sensitive, and you've got some of those in the herd that are going to be pretty aggressive, and it's cows. The older cows are the ones that get really aggressive.
They're the ones protecting the herd.
Well, they're the ones that they're protecting their calf.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they only had like 125 head in that one group, and there'd be a cow that'd be in the middle. And if you got too close, she'd come out to the edge of the herd and then start coming at you. And, I mean, you might be 100 yards off from that herd to start with. So you'd have to work it real gently because, I mean, they've got horses down there that have been flat gored that were just out in the pasture with them.
Yeah, and you don't think about it, but a buffalo really doesn't have that much trouble outrunning and outmaneuvering a horse.
Oh, no. They're pretty handy. Well, that's why cutters like to use them, is because they're quicker than a cow.
Right. So what would be the indication that you've got them working as a herd? How would you know that you've rebooted the herd instinct?
Well, because they'd be grazing together. It's easy to tell when you've got animals are actually working as a herd. They'll all be grazing in that same direction. You know, if the feed isn't dense enough, they might be grazing as a herd, but they might be 50, 75 yards apart, but they're all grazing in the same direction. You know, whenever you go out and you look at a bunch of cows grazing or see a bunch of buffalo out alongside the highway grazing, it's there as many directions as there are, that's how many directions that they're facing. Everybody's grazing in a different direction, and they're not really grazing anywhere, but when there is a herd, they'll be grazing in the same direction and just constantly on the move. You know, this is all dependent upon on your forage base. If it's dense enough, you know, they might only graze a quarter mile in a day,
mm-hmm.
or they might graze a mile a day. It all depends on how dense that forage is and how wattable the forage is, but everything's dependent upon that forage base as far as is the spacing on the cattle or the bison, but they're all grazing the same direction. You know, and that's Bud Williams, he believed that it was natural for cattle to graze apart, you know, go away from each other to graze, because that's what he's always seen, but that is actually turns out that is because of our handling, and then he would actually stop them to graze, and he wouldn't leave until they were grazing further apart or grazing away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But when you slow them down to graze and then get out of their way, they will keep grazing in that same direction without grazing away from each other.
Sure. How long does that usually take, the process?
On cows, it only takes them 5 days. I mean, it took me 11 days on one herd in Australia, but we're working with 3,500 head. And it was just three of us and in timber, so there was a lot of, you know, it was a little touch and go if we were even going to be able to get that done with that many people.
Right. And then what kind of maintenance do you have to do to keep that herd instinct going in a group?
Once they pick it up, as long as you're consistent with your handling, they will generally stick together. If you go in there and you just start picking them up and moving them like we normally do, you know, you go to the back and you start going back and forth, zigzagging across the back, that'll break it up instantly. Or if you, you know, you start doing anything to put stress on them, or if, let's say you're working off a well and the well goes down and you don't notice it for 2 days or they're having to fight for water, they'll break up. But as long as you keep the stress off from handling and they've got enough feed to keep going, and they're not having to compete for water, they'll stick together pretty good.
Sure.
I've got a guy in Mexico, Fernando Felomir. He's got that one group on, he's got 4,000 acres divided in half, and he basically isn't doing anything with them other than making an adjustment every few weeks if they miss the place. and they're staying together.
Bob, just a quick break right now. We're going to talk a little bit about the High Plains Ranch Practicum, and I think that we need to continually be exposing ourselves to new ideas, new ways of thinking, and the first couple of days of the High Plains Ranch Practicum is just such a great time of having your paradigms challenged and stretching your mind and stretching your thinking, not to mention all of the other classmates that you have that you'll get to hear about their operation and have opportunities to get a picture into how they're operating and learn from them and network with them. So if you're interested in a great educational opportunity, really is worth the drive. I encourage you to look at High Plains Ranch Practicum at hpranchpracticum.com. Now back with more with Bob Kinford.
And the handling portion we talked about in your previous episode, which will be linked at the show notes page as well, and you talk about starting them from the front as kind of the opposite, obviously, of zigzagging from the back. But could you refresh my memory a little bit about that idea?
Well, let's just say that you want to head north with the herd. You start from the north end, and you ride towards what would be your back. And I mean, they can be facing all different directions, but you're right up that side and you adjust your position as you're going up to where the cattle will go by you. You know, you might have to adjust to one where it'll wrap around and go by you. And the next one might need to just fade out a little bit for it to go by you, but you constantly adjust that. And you're actually starting like one side at a time that way. You're not taking the right direct front and pulling it out, but you get the one side started, and then, you know, all the calves they see you coming and they see their mother going, and then you're out of their sight and they can follow their mother. It's not like when you're zigzagging back and forth and, you know, those calves kind of pick up and they'll look around and their mother will go, and that calf will sit there and look at you for a minute, and then its mother will duck in front of another cow, and it's like, okay, where'd mom go? And that's right where your problems start when you get cattle not pairing up. But getting your motion from the direction that you're wanting to go, which maybe that might be better to explain it that way rather than starting from the front.
Sure.
But then the cattle, the first ones get drawn out, everything gets drawn to that motion rather than trying to get your motion from the back and push it through. I mean, if you're sitting at a traffic light, I'm sure you wouldn't like it if everybody started going around you before you got to go.
Sure, that makes sense. Yep. So you talked about Fernando Falamir, who's been a guest and needs to be a guest again. But you've turned me on to some other guys that I need to get on as well. But you mentioned that he's got one pasture that's 4,000 acres divided in half. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
I can hear the grazing gurus say he needs smaller pastures. And what you're talking about with your method is that, no, he doesn't necessarily need the fence infrastructure if he's got the cows working as a herd. Is that right?
No, they don't. And see, this is – in Alan's show, he would rather have people herding the animals rather than using the fences. And the thing is when he came to North America and he starts promoting this, nobody wanted to herd. Oh my God, that's too expensive. We got to go the fences. And, Billy Finnan was the first man in North America to do the holistic management. And I was with visited that place with his grandson here a couple of years ago. And I mean, it's just incredible, but they've got fences all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have a crew of people just at 60,000 acres, and they got a crew of people doing nothing but fences. Then they have their cowboy crew. And it's like, you can do away with all those fences. Cows are not, you know, cows are kind of lazy. If they have food in front of them, they're only going to eat as far as it takes to get themselves full.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get the herd instinct going, you know, you can be a 1,000 acre pasture or a 2,000 acre pasture, and you know, if it's like in a valley, they will strip graze it. If you're up in the mountains, you might need to make daily adjustments, but it doesn't take, you know, a crew of people to move them. It doesn't take two people to move them. Two people can do 3,500 head if the terrain isn't too rough.
Hmm.
So we're spending all this money on fences. When you have that many more fences, what else do you need? You need a more extravagant water system.
Right. That's probably the most expensive part, generally.
That's the most. That's way more expensive than the fence. So if you can take and put your water system where, say, you've got 4,000 acre pastures or 2,000 acre pastures, if Fernando had 4,000 acre pastures, he could basically be doing them off the same water point that he's doing now on the 2,000 acre pastures.
Right.
And that takes off a lot of maintenance right there.
Sure. Yep.
You know,
depreciation.
Well, depreciation, maintenance, just the miles that you have to go in a day to maintain these extravagant water systems that they do, or the daily. I mean, these guys are doing all these fences and they're using a portable water system. You know, I'm sitting there scratching my head going, if you're doing this every day, you could go fishing instead of doing that. You'd have days where, you know, you don't have to really do anything. You make your adjustment on your cattle today, your water's good, go fishing. You don't have to be out there fixing the fences and it just makes more work and costs more money. The more work you have to do, the more money it costs to do the work. So it's an economic deal as well. So no, you don't need those fences. And once you get your grass base, you're going to get the same type of herd density as you do when you're running the fences.
Mm-hmm. When I mentioned this article in the private Facebook group, you said that these folks were 3/4 misguided. Did you have anything in particular in mind that was the quarter they got right?
The quarter they got right is, that they can take and use bison to regenerate this prairie. But they could also do it using cows. You know, they're wanting to do the romanticism. They think that nature will just take its course, and without ever thinking that, well, we've changed nature enough that we have to manage nature to get nature reminded what it's supposed to do.
Right.
You know, these bison don't know they're supposed to be together as a herd and migrate.
Because of our intervention, they don't know that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's not going to fix itself without our intervention.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, you look at antelope, and, well, right down here between Van Horn and Marfa, they've got a couple herds of antelope down there, and they stay in the same 2 or 3 pastures.
Right.
And that's another animal that used to migrate thousands of miles. So they're going to really make this big nature preserve and have nature take it over. They need to also have the elk on there, they need to have the antelope on there, and they need to have somebody working with all of these herds to get them acting like a herd and reintroduce them into migrating longer distance.
Sure. You know, that was one of my questions is, I mean, you talk about 3 million acres being a huge amount of land, but I wonder if it's even enough. You know, if you're going to start talking about regenerating this land with these animals, you're going to have a bunch of animals to have them working as a herd to the extent that is capable of regenerating the land. Is 3 million acres going to be enough at that point?
Well, it's 3 million acres. You regenerate 3 million acres. How many animals is that going to take?
Right.
You know, how many? Okay, right now, if you look at this is all grazing lands. How many animals are on this 3 million acres, and it's understocked.
Right.
So I don't have any of the numbers in front of me. In fact, it'd probably be a pain to do it. But if somebody could see how many animals were on there, there'd probably be, say, 100,000 animals on there. And it's going to take, eventually they've got to get that to where to be at least 3 times that.
Right.
If not 4 times that.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that they had cows on there. I mean, they bought this land from ranchers who were running cows. I know that area of the world. It's not that far removed from where I'm at. It's short grass prairie. The only thing you can do on short grass prairie is raise cows. You can't farm that land, and that's why it was still being used to raise cows. So they've bought this land from ranchers, removed the fences, removed the cows, and tried to stock it with buffalo, but like you said, the buffalo don't have the instincts.
Buffalo.
Right, the buffalo don't have the instincts, and they don't have enough buffalo.
Yeah, so I don't know how a person would get to convincing them to go ahead and reboot the herd instinct and, you know, train. You know, I'm too old to take and do this on a full-time deal. I mean, I'd like to do think that I could, but I already know that winter time and my body don't mix. But if they could at least start out with, say, 2,000 or 3,000 head and train a half a dozen guys to go ahead and get the herd instinct going back with, in with them, and then have a couple guys doing that herd and then start up another herd and stay with them for several years, taking them through the whole place instead of just sitting right where they're at. I mean, it'd be a, you know, it'd be a pretty neat undertaking to do, just to see the difference that it'd make in the prairie, but you know that it'd make it better, but just being able to introduce those bison into being a herd and then actually teach them to migrate and do the same thing with the elk and the same thing with the antelope.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, they've got the size and the weight of a cow and the mouth of a sheep, so they can accomplish a lot with as far as improving land if they're managed correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we are, David, with his slingshot swinging it around, and I'm going to title this a rock that we're casting out there at Goliath: the 3/4 misguided ambitions of the American Prairie Reserve. And so let's just pretend that this rock is like David's rock, going to hit them right between the eyes, and they take notice and they say, gee, we've been wrong all this time. We want to learn about more of these ideas of instinctive migratory grazing. Where should we send them, Bob?
Well, I would say to Van Horn, Texas, but they probably wouldn't like it. But to migratorygrazing.com is where they can pick up some more information on it. And I've got a few videos on there.
Sounds good. And some of this is also covered in your Stockmanship DVD. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And it's I was talking with Roger Saber here a couple of weeks ago, and he told me I need to re-edit that. And it's like, but what he says I need to do is I need to get the program where, like they have on the sports shows, where they've got the one, they've got the arrows they've got on the two guys of where they're going. He says I need to do that so that people can pick it up easier.
Sure. Easier said than done. But in any case,
yeah,
the Stockmanship 101 DVD in its current form will be linked at the show notes page, workingcows.net/85. So I know that last time I had you on, I saw a couple of them got sold. So I'd like to see a whole bunch more get sold, and especially some up to the American Prairie Reserve there in Montana. So maybe you'll be getting a phone call from them.
Oh, that'd be nice.
All right, Bob, thanks for your time today.
Okay, thank you.
Really enjoyed that opportunity to sit down with Bob and to talk to him about some of his perspective. I think I got another episode coming up next week with one of the persons in charge of grazing management on one of the buffalo herds for the Turner Ranches. So look forward to that. It's a really neat opportunity to kind of marry up with what Bob was talking about here on how we could use these animals to regenerate the landscape. And now we can talk to some people who are using those very animals to regenerate landscapes and talk about maybe some of the different ways that they go about it as opposed to how the American Prairie Reserve is approaching it. So looking forward to that. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate all the feedback and all the opportunities that I've gotten to connect with some of you. Encourage you to find me on social media, facebook.com/workingcows, or twitter.com/ypclayconry. Reach out to me there and find me online there, and let me know how you heard about the show, and we'll be in touch. So look forward to next week's episode.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.